Hello and welcome back to the Surviving Autos. Yes, you're hearing Australian voice, but clearly it's not the dulcet tones of one Mr. Nick Iadanza. I'm your host this week, Ryan Brink, and I'm super excited because not only do I get to talk to one of my favourite people, Mr. Matt Tarrant, I also get to talk to you guys, who some have heard me before, some have not, but very looking forward to talking week 10, the penultimate week of Australian Survivor. It's been a huge season. It's been coming and coming and coming, and finally, after 23 episodes, we are there. We are in the finale week. We've got three to go. And to recap everything we've seen this week, I'm bringing in Mr. Matt Tarrant. Matt, how are you going?
I'm good, mate. It's crazy, isn't it? The puzzle prince goes away for a little bit and the king takes over. So it's good to be here. He'll hate me for saying that, and that's why I said it.
My goodness. Rocky star already.
I know. How good is it? But it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm so super excited, I'll be honest, to be hosting a RHAP podcast. It's dumb. It's ridiculous. I'm absolutely honoured. So thank you, Nick, and thanks to the guys for letting this happen. But, I mean, surely there was a better option. But I'll take it.
So as well, Matt. Like, I was a little surprised because we were watching a Survivor episode. It's like, oh, I'm going to Japan. Do you guys want to host an episode? And we're like, okay, we can do that, I guess.
I wonder at what point we were on the list, because I feel like I wasn't on the top. He's asked everyone and no one else could do it. Everyone else is busy, so why not the professional magician who clearly doesn't have to do a lot each day? I'm sure he has time to chat about Survivor. And he's right, I do. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. You yourself are an absolute... you're the emperor, basically, of the Adelaide Alliance, I think, Ryan. You've kind of held us all together. Your podcast itself is brilliant, and it's an absolute honor to have you hosting it as well, and I'm really lucky to be here with you, because without you this would have been an absolute mess.
Well, it still may be a mess, but we'll see how we go. So to everyone who is listening, thank you so much for checking it out. Even though the Nick's away, we're gonna have some fun with it. Is it gonna be typical Noel Oz? Well, we're not as good as Nick, but we'll try and do the best we can and get through the week. We're lucky in a way though, Matt. It's only two episodes this week, so we were back to a shorter week, which is great. So I feel like, I don't know, we've just had so much Survivor lately. I don't know how you've been, but Survivor, US Survivor, there's just been so much on our screens recently.
It's insane, isn't it? And myself and Nick have said this so many times, we just kind of want a break in a weird sort of way. As much as we love talking about it and living Survivor, it does sometimes get a lot. I know Kira, my fiance, she keeps saying, thank God there is just 1 week left, because you need to focus on other things, because right now my to-do list is monstrous. And for whatever reason, I keep kicking things off the list and putting Survivor at the top. So it's great. She's loving it.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I don't know how other people are feeling, but I was saying this the other day. When we get to US Survivor, it's almost at this point where we have five left, and then we'll go, and that will be the start of the final episode, and we'll just go bang, 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 and have our top three or top two, and that's all done. But with Australian Survivor, we've still got this whole extra week left with twists and turns and three episodes, and there we go, three episodes, and there's only two more eliminations, so there's another twist that will come up. Like, it's just, there's so much still to go in this game.
It never ends, Australian Survivor. It just goes on and on and on. It felt like it when you're out there, and watching it back is even worse. And, you know, I think I've said this so many places and so many times, this is an absolutely incredible season of Survivor. I've absolutely loved it. I am hopeful that this final four can deliver something really good. I'm a little bit timid if they're going to be able to or not, but I think there's hopefully going to be a really good ending to this season, because it deserves it after what we've seen so far.
Yeah, it needs to have a great ending. I know we've got the finale coming up next week. You're going to be in attendance there, which is going to be huge. So we'll probably chat about that at the end, but the way we're going to run this podcast, for those people listening, we're going to break down the first two episodes. Thank you so much to everyone who's let and given us listener questions. We'll try and break down those. There's some really good ones, one from Rebecca especially, which we'll talk about right at the end, which talks about breaking down everyone's jury potential speeches at the end. So we'll definitely delve into that, but let's get into it, man. Let's talk about Monday night's episode 22 of Australian Survivor. And this is the one where Ziggy goes home.
Yeah, she goes home. The girl who can't play an idol correctly finally leaves. But you're going to give it to Ziggy. She, I think her idol play hasn't be necessarily the greatest, though we can maybe talk about what she has kind of revealed in her either jury villa and also some of her after-game interviews as well about why she played it. But, you know, I think Ziggy overall was quite a strong player as Survivor. I think she did probably better than I thought she was going to. I remember when I first saw there was going to be an Olympian out there, I just assumed if that was known, you'd probably get rid of her quite early on. I definitely saw her as a pre-merge boot, so she definitely exceeded those expectations pre-game. You know, I think her game had a lot of ups and downs, that's for sure, but I think overall she played a strong game. She got quite far, probably further than I expected.
Really far. She got super far. And I'll just come and add as well. So exit interviews this week, Matt is doing, you've done Lockie's exit interview, you're going to be doing one with Ziggy, so they'll be up on the podcast feed probably by Friday as well. So make sure you listen to those to get more inside info. But yeah, Ziggy herself, I think I remember, Matt, because you do your power rankings, and I remember your preseason one. I'm pretty sure you had Ziggy pre-merge, so your expectations on her going in were pretty low.
Yeah, I just definitely saw Ziggy as someone who was going to come out there, and from what I've read about Ziggy, she doesn't know... She's not a Survivor super fan. She's not even probably what I consider a Survivor fan, even from what I know. So I just sort of just didn't know if she would, I guess, come in with the expectations about how, as a Olympian, she should play and what she should say and what she should do. And knowing, as we all did pregame, that this cast were going to be strategic players and Survivor, you know, Survivor fans and knowledgeable on Survivor, I just didn't think it was going to bode well for her. And I know personally, if I was out there and I was told that this girl was an Olympian, it just would give me doubt straight away. I would first of all know that she is obviously a physical threat, but not just even the physical side of things. She would have obviously some sort of really great kind of like teamwork and social game because of that. And just like, Olympians, I think they have to, you know, be so focused to get to where they want to be. I just thought she'd be able to bring those same skills into the game of Survivor. And there are definitely times where she did. I'm just really surprised they didn't get rid of her earlier on, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I think she just found herself in a really strong alliance early with people like Jared, and that helped push her through that early part of the game. I want to come back to the start of the episode. So the start of the episode is the aftermath of the huge Luke vote out, which I think for a lot of fans was just, wow, like who else is left that we're going to barrack for now? And I think one of the big moments was that it gets back. Jericho has a conversation with Lockie and says, you know what? Tara is flipping on you. I'm going to play this clip, Matt. This is what he had said, and then Lockie having a conversation with Tara.
Yes, sir.
Why?
You told Jerry and that I wasn't close against him, trying to get him out.
So you're believing one person? Have you gone and told anyone else?
No, I'm just talking to you.
I'm not going to come clean with something I didn't say or do.
Jerry's talking to Lockie about all the big moves I'm trying to get on him.
So, Maddie, all the big moves that Tara's trying to do on him.
Yeah. I'm so confused by Tara at times. And I think actually she does genuinely think she's playing a strategic game out there. And either the editors are doing a really good job at not showing what those moves are, but I'm just not seeing it, Ryan. I just don't know if it's a bit of delusion or if it's just that there is actually something happening on behind the scenes. I'm just really confused, to be honest, by this whole all of a sudden Tara considers herself a strategic threat and mastermind who's trying to make all these plays. I just don't see them, actually, to be honest. And even, you know, the plays, this is something I was thinking pre this interview, oh, sorry, this discussion today, that with Tara and the AK vote, I don't even think she actually really made the move itself. She just wanted AK out. And that's not really a move for me. It's just she wanted something to play out. From what I remember, she didn't really actually force that to occur. Other people actually made it happen around her. But, Tara is one of these really interesting characters out there. And she wants to make moves. She wants to be known that she's made moves. Are people going to buy it? I don't know, really. I'm not sure.
Is it too late? Like, this is the argument. She's made an alliance with Lockie. She's got he and her are a partnership. She, for all intents and purposes, is probably going to go to the end with Lockie at this point in the game. But for some reason now, she's decided to go over and she wants to be with other people that she could potentially, she in her mind, potentially beat. But maybe she doesn't realize that, like, what we're seeing as a viewer, I don't think it really mattered who she goes with to the end. Like, I personally don't see a winning game for Tara, even if she got out Lockie, because that vote can still be considered all the rest of the players' big moves as well. It's not just her move. It's everyone's move.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Tara was in a really tricky position where basically I think anyone out there is going to beat her in a final two. So, I mean, in saying that, though, it kind of means that if she does make a play on Lockie, she maybe gets out a threat that she considers a bigger threat to win against her, and maybe she has at least a slightly bigger chance of winning against these other guys. And I don't think she's going to be a target. I don't think anyone's going to target her to go out, because I think everyone out there considers her as someone they could beat. And I think everyone out there, and this is including guys like Peter, who we've barely seen, could possibly put together a story or an arc that could actually beat Tara in a final two as well. So I'm up and down if I think it was the right move for her to turn on Lockie. I think in a way it kind of was. Like, I don't think now that she's made this move and she's now kind of on the bottom maybe of this other group, I don't think she is. I just think she's someone that's going to make it to the final two no matter who she's alongside.
We'll get to that. I definitely feel like she's someone who you'd want to sit next to at the end. We have Lockie, and we talked about him throughout, and in this episode, it really looks like either Ziggy or Lockie has to win the immunity challenge or they're going home. Now, Matt, I want to ask you about this one itself, because this is the one that I believe that you did last season with the ball and it's rotating. Like, can you talk about that challenge itself?
Yeah, that challenge. So first of all, when we rocked up, I hadn't recalled seeing it before. And I remember Jonathan said, so you're going to have this ball, it's going to be in this ring, and it's centrifugal force. Is that what the word is? I can't remember what the word is, but I think it's centrifugal force. And I looked at him and I just went, I don't even know what that word is. And like, he looked at me and I'm like, dude, I don't know what this challenge is at all. Thank God he then said, you've got a bit of time to practice or whatever before the actual challenge started, which was thank God, because I was going to be terrible at it. But the challenge itself, what it's kind of reminisce, it's a lot of wrist action.
A lot of wrist action, Matt. So, okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it PG. But yeah. I guess when I worked out that was kind of the method, I sort of went, maybe I have a chance. Because that action is, I've got a good rhythm, I'm down pat.
Yeah. 15 years of practicing.
So I've got this, I think. And I actually surprised myself by doing quite well at that challenge. And I remember before that challenge, we actually had a few minutes to just kind of work out how it worked. And I think it was maybe 5 minutes. And I spent maybe 20 seconds just going, okay, this is how to start the ball rolling, and this is how you do it, and leave it there. So I left it at that, which I think worked out quite well in my favor, because after 5 minutes, probably half the guys were out, at least. A lot of guys really struggled with that challenge itself, because it is really, it's all about the rhythm. And I think it was myself, Lee, L, and maybe someone like Brooke might have been the final four, I think it was.
L won the challenge, didn't he, last year?
Yeah, it was L or Lee, one of the two. I get them confused because they're the same person. One of them won. And I remember L was just singing a song out there the entire time, knowing that she needed to keep the same rhythm. So if she sang, she could just go to the beat. And that's what it's all about. But we lasted a fair bit. I think the guys lasted maybe an hour and a half during that challenge. And I think I was maybe 30, 40 minutes, something like that from memory. Oh, so wow. Even that was a huge amount of time, I thought. But it was a lot of fun, just really tough, and a lot tougher than probably maybe it looks.
Yeah, it looked tough in this episode as well. Obviously, it was pouring down with rain. Lockie and Peter were the last two. It looks like Peter is doing pretty well, but Lockie was super confident, especially after he won. He just said,
I had that for an hour. I had that forever.
He was super confident. He had it for an hour. He had it forever. He was dominating. He felt very strong that he was going to be able to do it. And this is the thing. He wins his third immunity in a row, and this throws up all kinds of problems, because now, as much as they possibly wanted to get rid of him, again, he is safe and they have to go to plan B, but they didn't really know what plan B was straight away.
Yeah. First of all, going back to that comment about Lockie saying he had the challenge forever, I found there were like a couple of moments in this episode where I don't know if it was his ego or whatever it might have been. It really started to come out a little bit, and it actually quite reminded me a lot of Lee in that position, sort of later towards the game as well, where the social skills kind of just dropped off a little bit. And I think, I don't know if I want to call it self-entitlement or whatever it might be, but it definitely started to come and show at a little bit, because there was that. He also started calling the girls my girls and stuff, which, I mean, I had Charlie's Angels, so I can't say a lot about that, but that was more, I think that was more jovial than maybe this came off as. I just thought it was really interesting that I feel like his social skills definitely lacked at times throughout this game. And it's funny, because in the chat I had with him today, I brought that up. And he actually came up with some interesting comments on that as well. So maybe tune into that to see what he said to that and responded with.
It's just so interesting the way that we're seeing this different side of Lockie. And like for the X interviews as well, I've had people say that he can be a bit cocky Lockie at times, and that cocky Lockie maybe came out at that point.
Well, I mean, first of all, we have to realize this guy is a really good looking, strong dude who has had a pretty good life so far, quite successful.
The guy's a beast, mate. He's 6'6".
Mate, he would have women and men at his feet, and they'd be at his beck and call. He would never have been like, I laughed so much when he was in the Misfit Alliance at the start, because that bloke would never have been a misfit in his entire life, mate.
Yeah.
Like, you looked at these other guys he was with who all could be considered misfits, and then there's this really rugged, handsome dude who, like, it just didn't make any sense to me. And I definitely feel like we're starting to get a little bit of that as it goes on, as he's probably getting a bit drained, a little bit kind of that barrier of trying to protect his character out on the show maybe dropped off a little bit more at times, due to the fact that he's, 50 days in or something now.
Yeah.
So I get it. But it definitely was interesting that it started to come out kind of at a similar time to what it probably did for Lee as well.
It's really interesting. They talk about the plan B. The plan B is just Ziggy. Let's take out Ziggy, which makes sense. Like, I think coming into this week, we felt if Lockie wins, Ziggy's probably the obvious target, which makes sense. Tara, at the previous vote, had wanted to get out Lockie. He won immunity, so she couldn't then. Now she has a decision. Is she going to stay firm with Ziggy or Lockie, or is she actually going to decide to change that up and go with Michelle, Peter, and Jericho? And what I loved about this episode, Matt, was people like Jericho. I'm going to play this.
Jericho, what are you thinking?
What am I thinking?
We're going to have to draw rocks if you side with them.
Yeah.
Would you side with them over us and take the risk on drawing rocks?
Yeah, because I want risk. I love risk.
Cool. Happy days.
I love it. Happy days. He loves risk.
He's just so upfront and honest. Like, so many people, when you play Survivor, you would hide exactly what he just said. He's just so upfront and honest about so many things, Jericho. And that's what I think I really love about him as a character, because he just doesn't really seem to care. He was happily honest to tell Lockie, I've got options and maybe you're one of them. And if we need to go to rocks, I'll go to rocks, which is just great. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was quite funny. And it was, you definitely felt like Lockie was not expecting someone to talk to him in that way, and I assume probably not many people had in the past as well, which is why he was also kind of a bit thrown back by it as well.
It was really great. I just think that not only Jericho, but then we have Peter do the same thing where he says, you know what? I'm going to rocks. I'm going to rocks. And then Lockie has a conversation with Michelle as well, and she pretty much says the same thing. You come with us. Like, if that's what you want, come with us. He doesn't do that. So it's great, because I think out of all the people who are there on the fence, it's going to be Tara. Tara talks about it where she says this.
One of us has to flip, but I just don't know if I feel confident enough going over to them, because next tribal they just might vote me straight out because I was like the bottom of the pecking order. If I stick with the Lockie and Ziggy alliance, we, as in me, Jerry and Petey, have to draw rocks. And there's a 1 in 3 chance I'm going home tonight.
And that's the thing. She genuinely had a 1 in 3 chance. And someone like Tara, who I had already been voted out at one point in the game, she's so close to getting to the end. That's her goal, is to make it to the end. If you've got a 33% chance or 0% chance, myself personally, I'm risk adverse. So I'd probably have done what she did. But I don't know. What do you think she should have done?
I honestly think she made the right move, and only because I just don't think she's going to be a target from anyone. And making that move she did, I don't think is a big enough thing to add to her resume to get her to win up against you in the final two. I think all those guys out there probably consider her as someone they could beat. So it didn't really matter. You know, I think, you know, yeah, maybe she is on the bottom when you look at the alliance as a bare alliance, but is someone going to vote off like Tara before they vote off Michelle or Jericho? I don't think they're going to. So I think it was a fine move, to be honest. I did find it funny, though, that after being so upset early on in the season when Tara was called a flipper and she refused to suggest she was ever a flipper or she'd never be a flipper, now she's using the term herself. She's like, yeah, I'm all flippers are great. I'm a flipper. Where did that come from? Like, I thought flippers were awful, Tara, but supposedly they're all fine again.
She's doing the right thing, though. Look, to give her some credit, she had to make that move. She did it. She flipped, yes, but she's owning it. So I think you have to at this point in the game. You have to give them something. And for her to just hold firm and go to Rocks and be out, like, that's not cool. And I think one of the things that I didn't like from Ziggy at that Tribal Council was when they're talking about her argument back was, you can't trust them. You're going to be on the bottom of that four, which, you know, might be correct. But the way Ziggy was selling it is like, well, go to Rocks. I'm safe. I'll be immune. That's not the way you sell it to Tara. Like, that's not what you want to say to her at all, because you want to make her feel safe. Like, that's just saying, no, Tara, flip over because you could go.
It was really poor, that Tribal by Ziggy, I felt. There was another point as well. I can't remember the exact wording, but I think Jonathan said that Lockie, as a big threat, won immunity and raise that thought to her, and her response was, well, yeah, I guess Lockie is a big threat and I'm probably considered a big threat as well because I've, you know, I've won immunities as well. And you just don't say that. Like, everyone knows it, but don't, like, reiterate the fact that you are a big physical threat that they're not going to be able to beat. Just make up something, like make up something good, but just not that. Like, I think she spoke, and she spoke at her demise. She basically foresaw that, yeah, she was probably going to be the one to go if it wasn't going to be Lockie, which just didn't seem like great play at Tribal.
I feel like we're getting into DQ territory here, but I absolutely love this quote.
Tara, you got a headache?
I just love it. I think we've all got a headache watching some of this season, to be honest, JLP. But it was great. I just love it. I just think Jonathan this season has been so good. He's been so much better than last season. He was still good last season, but I think he's taking it to the next level this year.
He's definitely finding his own way into it, I think. And that was the one thing that we sort of saw out there in the season, that at the start, I kind of didn't have all the freedom that he probably would have liked, but that got better as the season went by and he was starting to own a bit more of what he said. It wasn't just coming from a producer. I feel like this season, now that he's done it once, there's a bit more trust and faith in what he says and does. And I get the feeling a lot of the things he is saying is just off his own cuff rather than something being fed to him. So it's really great to see. And I'm still adamant that he's a fantastic host of Survivor.
Yeah, even his quote where he's talking about, well, you're either the goat or you're led to the slaughter. Like, that's just perfect. I love that he's just drilling on me and really just, like, buying into what was said at the Tribal Council.
I love it.
Brilliant. That pretty, like, wraps up that episode. Ziggy goes, like, we talked about it at the start, but what's Ziggy going to be remembered for, Matt? What is something that we're going to look back and say, this is what Ziggy did? What is her standing moment? Because when I think of Ziggy, I just think of her more as a holistic physical player and someone who struggled to make moves with idols.
Yep, that's basically it. I think it's really interesting with Ziggy. I didn't expect this is what we'd remember her for. You kind of almost forgot that she was an Olympian at times just because of other parts of her play that kind of took over that thought space. And the idol stuff, I mean, it is probably going to be the main thing she's remembered for. She had this absolutely super strong and powerful idol, and both times she played it, just, I don't know if it was it definitely wasn't the right time the second time, but playing it on Annalise's immunity idol as well, I just don't know if that was right. I mean, she had the opportunity there to get rid of a big threat in someone like Lockie. Would that have meant her game was going to go as far as it did? I don't know. Maybe she'd be a bigger threat if she did make that move to get rid of Lockie instead. But yeah, I don't know. She's a real interesting one. I don't know if her strategic mindset of the game of Survivor would have been enough to get her that far without those idols, despite playing them poorly, if that makes sense.
Let me give the argument again. So our esteemed King Snake himself, Mr. Nikai Danza, last season played a hidden immunity idol when he was in fear that he was going home. You were there. You saw what happened. He thought he was going home. He played it and then went home the next vote. Can you draw any parallels between the two? Maybe sometimes you just feel uncomfortable and you should play it. Like, Nick is a big advocate. He says, if you've got it in your pocket, better to play it and know you're going to be safe than go home like a Henry with it in your pocket.
Yeah, you're right. I just don't know if it's the same situation with Nick, because we basically told Nick if he wasn't going to play the idol, he was going home. We were quite that upfront about it. And I think in the discussions that Nick had with myself and Brooke and Flick at the time, he knew he had to play it. I think Ziggy just got a bit freaked out from what I remember, or from what I've heard her say. It was kind of a lot to do with that Henry vote, where Henry did leave a final in his pocket. I think she was just worried that was going to happen to her as well. So I understand why she played it. It just wasn't right. But that is coming from an outsider's perspective who has had the opportunity to watch it all actually unfold. She doesn't get that opportunity.
I think that's fair. So episode 23, the Tuesday night episode, this is huge. And this is the episode that Lockie finally is taken out. I want to come back to the start of it, though, because what I loved, I felt like Lockie at the very beginning of the episode played this really well, where we find out, and I'll play the clip now, we find out that he actually has Annalise's immunity idol congratulation note.
I've got a fake idol. When Annalise got voted out, she dropped her congratulations, you have an idol piece of paper, and the rag. And I was like, phew, that could come in handy. So I grabbed it, kept it with me this whole time. So I'm pretty much planting the seed with Tara that I've got an idol, hoping that she'll spread it to everyone else.
So, Matt, I know you chatted to Lockie. I also chatted to Lockie today. I asked him myself about making a fake hidden immunity idol, because we didn't see a fake one at all. He said he tried to make one with me, and he said, like, he got some, I don't know, bamboo and tried to shape it. But because, I guess, Australian Survivor had the same idol as every idol this season, I guess it's a bit hard to make a fake one.
Yep, you can't just bring out a stick. People will know
stick.
That
it's a damn stick.
It's a stick. So, yeah, he said the same to me, and I'd completely understand. And I think everyone always says, just go out and make a fake idol. And I'm not sure if people think we have, like, a Coles or a Woolworths where we can go get sticky tape and glues, but we just, you literally have what's in on a beach. So it's tough to make an idol, and that's why a chicken idol looks exactly like it did, not like an idol. I think it would have been really tough for him to make an idol that looked anything like what he had. The only option I think he had, and this is actually something that I did in my season, is I had it wasn't even an idol. It was just a piece of foam that I found washed up on the beach. And I just wrapped it up in some palm frond, like some old palm frond. So it just looked like one of those kind of like sacks that they put idols in, and had that in my bag. So that was probably the only thing he could have maybe have done. And they might have bought it. I mean, I know they're probably just going to say, we'll pull the idol out. It's not going to help a lot, but he could have maybe at least, like, I don't know, put it in his pocket or something, and people would just see it and go, okay, maybe he actually does have something there. That's the only thing I would have thought maybe he could have done.
Yeah.
Rather than craft an actual idol-looking idol.
What I really liked about the way he tried to do it was, at first, he just has a subtle conversation with Tara to kind of plant that little seed in her by saying, look, here's the clue. I buried the idol. This is what it says. She read the clue, so it clearly says, congratulations, you have found a hidden immunity idol. So, like, if that's me reading, I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty genuine. And he plants that little seed in her to then go off and chat to other people. What did you think about that decision to do that?
I think him playing that with Tara, and that strategy with Tara, was the best person to play that with, because I think Tara's probably the only person there who would have bought that. I think the others might have seen through it almost instantly.
But what do you think, though, Matt? Like, if you actually have a proper clue that says, congratulations, you found the hidden immunity idol, you're saying you're not buying that? Like, that's pretty strong.
Yeah, I do. But I also just think I would want to see it.
Yeah, I agree.
And, I mean, it was kind of similar with Nick. Like, we didn't know, we thought he had an idol, but it wasn't until he actually showed us where we actually had that guarantee. And I think the, argument to what you just said is that if you have an idol and you're telling someone you have an idol, you should be able to show them the idol. Like, it's that simple. There's no reason why you shouldn't. And just to say that, oh, it's been hidden somewhere, well, get it. It's that simple. And he's in a position where he has to play it where he's going to play it. It's the final five. He has to play it then. It can't be played after that. So if even if people know he has an idol, it's not really going to change anything if he's telling them anyway. So no. I don't know.
No, I agree with that as well. I think that was Peter's argument with Lockie at one stage when they're off at the reward. And it's like, well, show me that you have the hidden immunity idol. Like, get it out. Like, flop it out, Lockie. Actually, show me what you've got. And that was the whole purpose of it. He just needs to show him that this is what it is. And my issue with the way that Lockie played this, I think he initially played it well, but I think he goes to too many people and tells them that he has an idol. I think he just needed to leave it with Tara and let that just grow and let that manifest itself, where it looks like he's almost going to everyone and saying, yeah, I've got an idol. But then you can't back it up.
Yeah, you're right. And I also think maybe he could have left it a little bit later as well to make that move, and probably prior to making that play, maybe go out and actually look for an actual idol, because you just never know. I think the issue of him giving them enough time is they also were able to realize, and I mean, maybe they didn't realize this, but they should have realized that all they needed to do anyway was to split the votes, and it didn't really matter. Because even if he did play an idol, they could still get someone out, like a Pete or whatever it might have been.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I guess that comes back to, I was going to come to this later, but we see at the tribal council, Michelle does vote with Lockie. Do you think that was her just trying to split the votes on Peter just in case? Or what do you think? Do you think that was just something that he had convinced her to do? Because I'll play this clip now of that conversation they had.
You, out of the people that are still here, I think that you've played a great game. I would rather sit near someone that's played a really good game than someone that hasn't.
I mean, don't go back until Pete
said.
I think it's better to get rid of Pete.
Because they had that conversation where he says, like, I respect your game. Let's go together. We're the two best people left in the game. Let's go mano a mano towards the end together. And then we see her vote with him at that tribal council. So I was left confused about that vote.
Yeah, I still am confused about it, to be honest. And I think even Lockie wasn't really entirely sure why that occurred, if it was a strategic decision or if it was just a decision on the spot or whatever it might have been. And I really don't know. I would like to have thought that they had spoken about it, and maybe they all kind of expected that, you know, if someone was to go, Pete's the option, so they were going to split it. But maybe they didn't. I don't know. I mean, we in our season, we split almost every single vote. I don't know if they've done that as much maybe this season. They've still done it a fair bit, but I don't know if that's been an exact strategy all the time like it was for us, because we had so much control over most of the season. So I don't know. I'm Michelle's really smart and strategic, so my gut says that it was, you know, a strategic move to split those votes, but I just don't know.
So I've come to the immunity challenge now / reward, and Matt, I was disappointed that we had this huge reveal behind the curtain. We knew there was a car because we saw the advert, the Holden Trailblazer, sponsored by Holden, and which is fantastic. But we didn't see Lee Castledine there. And for the people in America who don't know this, Lee Castledine has been on every bloody advert for Australian Survivor this whole season. It has just been, we've seen more screen time of Lee this year than we did last year.
We have seen more of Lee this season than a lot of the cast members on this season. We've seen more Lee than we have seen Jared, Odette, so many others. So it's been quite funny, to be honest. And I did have a bit of a laugh about that with Lee yesterday, just to say, mate, where were you? Where were your kids? Because you need to get in that car. And it's funny, I'm not sure why they didn't pick me. I mean, I'm just as good looking and as athletic as Lee. I mean, I guess marketing people make strange decisions sometimes.
They do, Ryan, sometimes. But I'm not quite sure why they have this, you know, amazing professional athlete, and then they've got this magician from Adelaide that they could easily pick up and choose.
It's a good point.
Doesn't make sense.
It's a good
doesn't
point.
Doesn't make sense. No.
It doesn't at all. But no, I definitely agree. I would have loved to have seen Lee Castledine with just a bit of a, you know, bit of a mateship shirt or something on, and just, you know, fly that mateship flag just for the last four, just to kind of be like, you know, here I am. And oh my God, Ryan, it could have been a Cochrane moment. He could have said, guys, we're going to go for a drive in this Holden, and you can ask me any questions about strategy and I'll help you out. I'll help you discover the best way to make a mate.
And make a mate.
Make a mate. And it would have been good, I think.
Just have him there with the whole go down the beach and play some beach cricket and mate, just go and there's L down the back of the kids. And it would have been great. It would have been fantastic to see that. So we missed out. We missed out our own Cochrane moment with Lee Castledine season 3. Make it happen. I just think for the laugh, it would have been hilarious, but it's fine. It was really good. And I guess this comes up. Having a reward and immunity in one, especially when it's such a bloody big reward, I personally would have loved this if they had to put this, and we know there's a non-elimination episode coming up. I'm not 100%, we believe it's on Sunday. I feel like this would have been a great reward to have in that episode to fill it out a little bit. I don't know what's in that episode, but to have it with an immunity, it was quite strange for me.
Do you think maybe they're saving the family visit maybe for that Final Four? That's the only thing I can come up with. But I actually don't know if – I'm just getting the feeling there might not actually be a family visit this year. I mean, they've already had kind of two family moments with the object or the gift from home as well as the letters. And, I mean, Channel 10 don't have a lot of money. So it wouldn't surprise me if they've actually skipped the family visit, which I think, from what I understand, a lot of fans will actually quite enjoy that because I think they're kind of sick of it. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, no, I definitely think this was such a big, epic reward that they probably could have left it for that episode if they don't have something just as big planned. Yeah, I enjoyed the element of having not only a reward challenge but an immunity involved as well, and such a big reward. I quite liked it, and I did get a bit of a giggle that Lockie was so close. Just, I think it was just 2 seconds.
2 seconds, Matt. 2 seconds he had left. My gosh, I think we heard that 1,000 times. I even said it on the podcast.
Mate, he said it about 13 times. And Matt, I actually interviewed him today as well. So, and if anyone watched Jury Villa as well, he mentions it quite a number of times again as well. So,
yeah. And for people who are watching the Jury Villa videos, as he's being whisked away in that Holden Trailblazer, just the burn of having to leave as well in that car as well would be horrible.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen was poor Lockie getting picked up by a Holden Trailblazer that he just lost, and him just in such disdain and anger. And he actually took it really quite well, but you could tell deep inside he wasn't happy.
What I loved about this was Michelle winning. So in Ziggy's votes at the last tribal council, she votes for Michelle. She says Michelle is the worst at challenges. Effectively, she just said she sucks and that she's not going to be able to beat Lockie. And then for her to turn around in the next episode and be the person who knocks out the challenge king of the season, I just felt was such a good moment. And there are some people who don't like Michelle. I'm in the I'm okay with Michelle camp. I don't know where you're at, but I kind of find it a little bit funny that she's the one out of everyone left who won the car.
How can you not? I just don't get why people don't like Michelle. I actually think, how do I put this? I think a lot of it is to do with the way she speaks and the way, I don't know.
She speaks like a flight attendant. Like, seriously, it's crazy. She's just very and this is what will happen at Tribal Council. This is why we're doing it. And this will be the outcome. Like, it's very I don't know, matter of fact.
Okay, I think this is what I think why that happens. And she speaks like that at Tribal Council. And in my head, this is why. I think because she knows at Tribal is, that's kind of the most level-headed moment where anyone can get an opportunity to speak, because you're kind of doing it like to the camera, one-on-one of this big group. It's always a big moment every episode. She knows that. So she knows if she articulates herself and has a strong enough message, that's going to make airtime. Yep. And I'm not saying she's going for airtime, but I know when I was going to Tribal Council, I would be like, well, I want to articulate myself in this way to make sure whatever I say is going to make it to air. And also, I would also pull facial expressions and reactions to anything anyone said.
You were gifting out there? My gosh, you were looking for the gifts?
I kind of was, yeah. So I did that a lot because I know as soon as I made them, Jonathan would ask me a question. And I had to then own that moment because I know almost every episode they show a moment where Jonathan or Jeff is like, oh, You just rolled your eyes. Why did you roll your eyes? I wanted to be that guy as much as I could. And that sounds really weird because there are moments out there where you remember it's a TV show and others you don't. For me, Tribal Council was always that moment. I think that's what Michelle's doing. I think that is why some people are disliking Michelle, just because of how her tone is and how she kind of is, I don't know, kind of like discussing things at Tribal in the way with her tone and just her language and all this sort of stuff and her facial expressions. Yeah. I actually think it's the only reason why people don't like her. I can't think of any other reason. I think she's got a really strong, good resume of the game. She's made moves. I think she is likable. She's a strong woman in this season, possibly one of the strongest, if not the strongest, I think.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. And we'll come to that when we talk about the final four more in depth after the recap. But it is interesting. And I'm going to raise this question now. It's from Fiona Wall. She asks, will the car curse extend to Australian Survivor? So Michelle has won this car, and we know in Survivor history, you win the car, you don't win the season. Do you think that this is a possibility this season, or can she be the person to break the curse?
In my most recent power rankings, I had her as one of two people with a chance to win this game. But at that time, I felt a very small chance. I actually think I'm less on her now. I just don't think she's going to win. I don't think. I've still got it down to two people, but Michelle's not in that two anymore. So I think the car curse continues, I'll be honest, yeah.
So after Michelle wins, she gets to choose two people to go on a reward with her, and she decides to pick Jericho and Tara, which I felt were the two perfect people to pick because I think both are probably the more emotional players, and Peter, I feel, is someone who can understand. I don't know their relationship and where they're at, but I feel like Peter's pretty level-headed, and he'll understand not being picked strategically. So what do you think about that, and what do you think about the reward itself and then going off and having a picnic together?
Yeah, I think it was the right move for her to make. In a way, though, I think maybe she could have taken Peter instead of Jericho, just because, I mean, if I wanted to go to top three with three players out there, that if I was Michelle, I would want to take Peter and Tara rather than Tara and Jericho, because I think Jericho has quite a good resume and a good chance to win the game. So I guess that it has its positives and negatives. I mean, you do want Jericho on your side as well. He's the one person out there that could definitely, like, strategize and find a way in with Lockie as well. So you don't want to leave him alone with Lockie. But, yeah, he had also had the potential where you might want to consider Peter as well. But you are right. Peter is very level-headed. I think he's a very smart player and a very smart person in this game. So he would have totally understood. So it wasn't a huge issue for him not to be there.
What it left was an interesting pairing back at camp, and we'd seen this fracturous relationship throughout the season. They've never been on the same side, and today it really blew up. Peter really wanted nothing to do with Lockie. I'm sure you asked him, because I asked him in my ex interviews about the relationship with Peter. He just said Peter wasn't even into the small talk. There was just no talk, and personally, I think that you should always try and at least keep a relationship semi-open and not completely close it off, even if that person is going home, because you still want to, if they're going on the jury, you want to send them home at least thinking somewhat positively about you, because you want their vote at the end. So I don't think it's great jury management, but obviously there's stuff that we're not seeing that's going on. And when we have at Tribal Council, I'm going to play this clip here of Lockie just ripping into Peter.
You've called me a goat and you've called me Puppet Pete.
I will tell you that right now. You're a goat.
What do you think about that, Matt? Like, they're just being open about it this season. I can't remember anyone saying, and this is to full respect to Christy, she won the game, but at Final Five, she looked like the goat of the season, the person who would go to the end and you would win against. And I can't remember ever hearing that last season. This year, they're just ripping in. You're saying, you're the goat, Puppet Pete, you're being manipulated. This is big gameplay right now.
Monstrous. Who taught Lockie what a goat was as well, by the way? Because Lockie would know that. Come on
well,
now.
Who taught Michelle the meaning? Because she's going off and explaining it so the viewers know. This is what I love about Michelle, where she gives like the Oxford Dictionary meaning of a goat. It's like she had a Wikipedia page in front of her, reading it from Wikipedia, saying, a goat in Survivor is defined as, and it was just fantastic. I loved it.
It was straight because I, from what I understand, the five that are left, none of them are big super fans of Survivor, and like I know definitely
I think, yeah I think Petey's a bit of a fan, but the rest of them, no.
Yeah, I mean, Pete's not going around telling them what a goat is, though, if he thinks he is one. I was a little bit unsure about how that came up, and maybe if they were fed that by someone, or if... I don't know. I just...
Wink, wink.
I found that a bit strange. I mean, maybe, you never know. But maybe they've had the Survivor Wiki has been printed out and left them somewhere, and they can go through all the terminology of words that we use as fans of the show. But I loved the whole conversation about goats. I thought it was... absolutely brilliant. I thought Lockie calling out Pete as being a goat was like really quite good. I also think that the fact that he has had Tara along his side the whole season and potentially as a goat was also quite funny, that he was calling out Peter for something that he's kind of been dragging on the whole time as it was. And I also, my favorite thing was when Tara got so offended because she like grew up with goats. That people were using the term incorrectly because that's not what goats do. And it was just... shut up, Tara. But I also love you. Like, it was just so unusual. But I just... One of my favourite moments. Really enjoyed it. It just, yeah, just insane.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's really, really good. We see Lockie finally go home. Obviously, huge challenge beast. He had to be taken out. Gosh, I'll pose this question. Last season, we saw someone like Lockie Lee make it to the end. We've seen that relationship with some people where it looked like your jury didn't respect the game that he played because he couldn't own his moves. I don't know if Lockie's that type of person. I think that he's been more upfront about some of the moves he's been trying to make and has acknowledged that it's a game. But do you think that a player like Lockie would have been respected as much as everyone believes he would have? Or do you think he could have been beaten at the end by any of these four?
I think Lockie would have been a good chance of winning. Yeah, I really do. And I'm someone that said quite openly that I think Lockie is quite strategic, at least in comparison to Lee as an example.
Yeah.
Or at least he understands his strategy a bit more, maybe. Because I think Lee actually is quite strategic. He just maybe at times didn't either admit to it or realize that he was doing things. Whereas I think Lockie probably had a bit more of an understanding of that. So, yeah, I definitely think Lockie had a good chance of winning this season. And I'm really surprised someone in his position as such a dominant alpha male actually made it as far as he did in a season like we're seeing. I would have expected him to have gone a lot earlier. I definitely, at the start, I think I said he was going to make merge, and I did think maybe somewhere towards the top six or seven, but... I'm very surprised that actually played out the way it did. Just a little bit surprising because we did see a Lee do that with our season and no one considered him. Lockie at times was a bit like that as well. I mean, for an alpha male, he won three individual immunities after merge for sure, but I think he only got something like four or five votes outside of his actual vote off episode, which probably isn't a lot for someone who maybe should have been targeted a bit more. So I just find that interesting.
And that's the thing, he was on the bottom for so long and he really could have gone out early if the old somehow had have lost the tribal council and decided to take him out. They kept on winning. And like, he was, even at the early stages where we lost the Sams and the Marks, like these are guys who were similar to him in terms of the physical beast, they're really strong at challenges. And it looked like the season wasn't going to appreciate that. So for him to really be on the bottom for a long time and still scramble to fifth place, like, that's still pretty impressive. And now you have someone in your fifth place club, Matt. You've got a new person to join you.
Yeah, and it's another alpha male.
Specimen of a man.
With a six-pack who's a challenge king. So we have a lot in common, me and Lockie. So,
it's fine. He wears his six-pack, you carry a six-pack. Like, it's, you know, it's same difference, Matt.
I was trying to... It's so embarrassing because I'm so embarrassing, Ryan, sometimes. And I was definitely embarrassing today chatting to Lockie and trying to draw comparisons together about him and myself, about how we both were very close to losing our final immunity challenge against, a really strong competitor and all this sort of stuff. And I'm just, as I'm hearing myself talk, I'm going, I am so full of crap half the time. Like, me and Lockie are nothing alike. But in my head right now, I'm still going, oh, well, there's a few things we're similar. But he's a really good player. I actually think he's the strongest alpha male. Maybe outside of Luke on this cast. I think Henry is probably someone to also consider an alpha male, and I think Lockie and Henry are very close. But I really respect how Lockie played, and I actually think maybe as fans of the show, a lot of us don't respect his character type, which I kind of understand as well. But I actually think if you look past that, for someone in his position, I think he played that game as well as he possibly could have. And I don't know how an alpha male in this day and age of Survivor gets further than what he did without just winning at immunities. What does he do? What does he do, Ryan? What is his ideal strategy? I don't know.
He almost has to do a Mike Holloway and just win out. And that's the tricky thing. And I had this argument with Adam on my podcast about his alpha bias, and we joke about it. But there is a perceived alpha bias with big fans of the show. And I think he did pretty impressive to get this far. So I think he was one of the biggest alpha types this season. I'm so glad, like, this season we had an alpha guy who was actually willing to make moves as well, because that's the evolution of the game that we really wanted this season.
Yeah, I think there were definitely aspects of him that were similar to Lee. Don't get me wrong. I think they had a lot of similarities, but I think Lockie made up for a few of the things that a lot of us fans didn't like in Lee. And I think we have to respect that as fans. I don't think we're going to find an alpha male better or like consistently as strong as someone like Lockie was. I think he was a really good cast out there. I think he's a good chance of getting a return season as well, potentially. Yeah, I just liked him, I'll be honest. And I definitely saw him as a player that had a chance of winning this game. And it was, I did have to roll my eyes today in our chat, because I asked him how much Survivor he'd watched, which probably isn't a lot. And I asked him what character from the US season or what player did he want to kind of like mirror his game upon? I reckon, Ryan, you could guess it in one name.
Aussie.
How good's that? And yeah, and he really did. I personally think he played a very similar game to Aussie, where he was very strong, an absolute challenge beast, strategic, and a good provider for the camp, but I just don't think his social game was there, which is kind of how I see Aussie's game as well. So I think he is Australia's Aussie.
I agree with that as well. So I'm going to come to some questions. Rebecca, Vary, I'm going straight to your question because I think it's such a good one. It's almost like a discussion point, and it really links in really well. Matt, so from the four people left, what is one move, at least from each of these people, that they can sell to the jury and say, at this point, at final four, this is a move that I made to put myself in the best position to win this game?
Yeah, right. let's do it.
Let's start with Michelle. We've been talking about Michelle a bit. So what is a move that you believe that Michelle could say that this is why I should be here and this is why I should win this game?
Okay, now before we get into this, I just want to make it very clear that I have the worst memory in the world. So
cool. I'm going to add my input as well, Matt.
Yeah, so good. Please do. Because that'll spark my memory as well, and it'll make me bring things up. But call me out if I'm wrong as well, Ryan, because sometimes I am. Yeah, I think, okay, so Michelle, now she was in a really tough position at one point, and she was able to get Ben out like quite quickly as well. And that seemed to be like a real last minute, last moment attempt. And at that point, I think everyone watching back home kind of went, oh, Michelle is a player. At that point, I think everyone out there also realized that as well, but she is still being able to continue her game, still play, I think, what's been a continued strategic and strong game, but she hasn't really been a target. I just don't think she's been a target. She's also made moves that I think helped get Henry out as well. I just think that they're the things that I would probably focus upon. And then, not only that, but she also ruined Lockie's winning streak, which is a big thing as well. I think she's
it's a huge one.
I personally think Michelle, if she's being honest and if what the people can see out there as well, she has the best resume of who's left out there right now, is how I see it.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I agree. I concur. The biggest move for me was getting Ben out and how she was able to manipulate Lockie into saying, look, Ben has raised your name with me. Like, he's the one who's targeting you. And just putting that doubt in Lockie's mind, and it almost flipped. You saw it, that scene when they're inside the camp and he's like, wow, we have to get Ben out. He wants me out. I want him gone. And it was such a good move by her. She escapes that point. She reconnects then with the Sunga Strong. And that group get over the people they need to take out the Summertown side. And it's just, it's put her in a great position really through this game. And has she played perfect? She's made moves that have put her in position. She made the move that got rid of Luke and Sarah subsequently. So she's got a resume that is as strong as anyone at this point. Someone who she's been working with a lot as well is Jericho. What do you think is a move that Jericho can go back to and say, this is the reason that you should vote for me at the end?
Yeah, Jericho's a really interesting one, I think, isn't he? I think out of the remaining guys, he's the one where I'm just not sure where his angle is going to be at. I think the real concern I have for Jericho is that now that Luke has been voted off, I think a lot of the moves they either made together or even Jericho made or Luke made are now going to become either Luke's moves or Luke and Jericho's moves. So I just don't really know if I can pinpoint one thing that Jericho has done that he's going to be able to target.
Yeah, it's super hard to know. I guess we could go right back to the Cookie Alliance and talk about how he tried to build relationships with people. And that alliance, I guess we talk about the Cookie Alliance, that was the alliance that came back together at the merge. So we had the Henry, the Sarahs, Luke, and they formed that big group that ended up taking out Summertown. So I guess we can talk about those relationships then, which kind of were influential. But yeah. I think it's hard to draw a lot. I think he's been part of moves, but he's always been like the sidekick, I almost feel. I almost feel like Tony and Wu from Kagayan is the same as like Luke and Jericho from this season. And this season we've got the Wu who's gone further than the Tony, and he's just got to find his own way a little bit.
It is very much so that. I get the feeling that Jericho's biggest moves are still yet to come. And I think if he is to make it to the end, his last 5 days in the game might be one of his targets. Now that Luke's gone, that's what he would focus his speech on at the end. But relying a little bit upon, you're right, the Cookie Alliance is a strong thing, and every move that he, Luke, and Sarah or whoever made together, we'll come back to it. I just think if he can make it there at the end without Luke, he'll be able to show people through that fact alone that he also made moves. He didn't need Luke there by his side.
And actually, when Alan was talking about it as well, I know I asked Lockie raised this in my chat as well, about how he had told Henry to play his Hidden Immunity Idol when Henry was voted out. And Lockie was really strong on Jericho as the one who convinced Henry to not play his Hidden Immunity Idol that night, where he felt that he had trust again. So there's like another move that maybe we didn't really see on TV, but people out there may be aware of. So that's probably something he can also add to his resume. I want to bring you to Tara. Now, Tara is an interesting one. Tara has an uphill battle because she has that stigma of the early game twist where she was saved and placed over. But from that point, she has been a fighter. She's been someone who's been on the bottom, who's had to build relationships to get back in a position. Has she been in a powerful position throughout? No. She was blindsided by multiple tribal councils this merge period. But what is going to be her story? It can't just be, I voted out my best mate in Lockie.
Tara is consistently blindsided or at least confused at every tribal council. She seems to not really know what's going on or things or comments are said that makes her confused again, which is just baffling every time. But Tara is in a really tough position, as you said, because of the fact that she was saved, that is going to be a really big stigma for her game. She can't escape that stigma. And that is why I don't think people are going to vote for her. But if she can come out and do a Christie-esque final tribal council up against someone who maybe doesn't know the game as well as others and isn't aware of what they have to do at the end, or they don't speak well enough or whatever it might be, if she can have that Christie Bennett final speech where she basically just comes out and says, I've been through so much adversity, so many challenges, so much difficulty. I've been to all these tribal councils. I got voted off. I've always been on the bottom. Just absolutely throw all that stuff on. That's her only chance. I don't think, apart from the Lockie move, Tara has any moves she can talk about. She needs to focus upon her adversity and hope that that wins the jury over because of either their hatred for whoever's sitting next to her or the fact that, you know, she's got two kids at home and, you know, she's a single mom, all this sort of stuff. I think that's how I would do it if I was Tara, and just hope that it's going to work.
Yeah, I definitely feel the backstory for Tara is what she has to sell, more about personal Tara than necessarily game Tara. So I think if she can sell that and she's against someone who maybe has a different story to her and has pissed a few people off, I think that's going to be her best bet. The last one's Peter. I don't know what to make of Pete. Like, he's someone who I when I see, I like him, but I just don't still know. We're 23 episodes in. I still don't really know a lot about Peter, Matt.
You know what I think Peter's getting? And I'm now going to call it the L edit. I think he's actually probably going to finish in the top three as well, possibly even in third spot. And from what everyone has said to me about Pete, he's like really smart. He's got a bit of social element to him as well. I'm sure he's making moves out there because of those things. We're just not seeing it. So maybe he's just not great TV. That's the only thing I can think about maybe for Pete. So when it comes to moves that he's made, I don't know. The issue of Pete is there is nothing springing to my mind right now that he's done. And that's a concern, because I don't know if that's going to happen for the jury as well. There's nothing I can think of, Ryan, because he has had such a poor edit, the worst edit of anyone in the top five, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well. I think, like, when I look back at Peter's game, I think of when he was on Summertow and he goes over with the Summertow 5 and takes out Amy and builds a strong alliance there. But apart from that, he had the decision when he mutinied over, but he was in a poor position at that point. I just feel like Peter, I feel he's been almost a person of circumstance where he's never been the big threat. He's not someone who is overly confrontational. He's not someone who's being like a big game player. And I think that's aided him to almost like go under the radar. He's the full under the radar player this season, where he's been able to just avoid certain things by playing quietly. And now he's in a position where he's in the top four. And I think he's got good social relationships with people, probably stuff that we don't see that transpires on TV. So I think if he makes it to the end and he can build on the relationships that he has with people on the jury, you talk about Tessa. He had a relationship with Ziggy for a very long time. Tara at the start of the game as well. Jared. So I still think there are people there who could be his advocate to win this game if he makes it.
Yeah, that's maybe all he's got, isn't it? The relationships that he's built up. I don't know if he can win, to be honest. That's the thing I worry about Pete. I'm just not sure if he is. But the thing I like about Pete is that even in this last tribal council, he spoke really well. He's really energetic. He's really smart. We're seeing that. We're just not seeing that really in the game so much. So I just, yeah, that's my concern for him. I think out of the remaining four, he probably has the smallest resume and the least likeliness of winning.
So we're going to dig more into these questions, Matt. I've got questions from both RHAP, the patron group, and also my own group, the Australian Survivor Community, and we're going to go through those and try and get them. One of them that I want to ask you is from Mitch Harwood, and it kind of links into a scene that we saw in the past episode where we had this montage of Jericho talking about how he nearly died when he went surfing and had that moment with Lockie in the water. And it comes back, and Mitch just asks, is Jericho getting the winner's edit? We saw him at the merge become the narrator out of nowhere. He just seems to be getting the most human, well-rounded edit at this point.
I saw the scene the other day with him and Lockie going in the water and having this little beautiful swim, and Jericho was scared of the water, all this sort of stuff. At that moment, I kind of went, well, I think Lockie's going, but this is building up a really nice little story arc for Jericho as well. I feel like he's getting the winner's edit. There's only one person I think that can take that away from him, who I don't think has necessarily had a full season of a winner's edit, but I definitely think someone like Tara is possibly the only opportunity to maybe take that away from him. But right now, I think Jericho has to be odds-on favourite to win.
That's interesting. What are you seeing in Tara's game that links in with what Jericho is getting?
I'm seeing different edits from them both, first of all. And I think I've said this before, that at the start of the season, pre-merge, basically, Tara was getting such a negative edit. It was almost all negative. And then post-merge, it's just become a bit more human. And I've always considered that maybe is just because I think she probably makes it to the end. And the fact that she's getting a real nice human, we're connecting to her a little bit more, hearing about her family, her kids, all this sort of stuff. It's trying to make the audience like her. And I see that as being one of two things. Either she gets to the end, and she's up against someone like a Jericho or a Michelle. And as an audience, a smart audience, we're all going to be aware that Tara doesn't beat that person. So they want to build up something that makes us like her and gun for her. Or she actually makes it to the end and they need to find something for her that we're going to be happy with her winning. There isn't enough strategy in her game to show that. So they're showing her, like, talk about her game and her strategy and stuff. They don't have the footage to show that actually taking place, but for the general public, maybe they're starting to believe in what she says. That is the only thing. I don't think she wins. I just, every episode I get of Tara, I just get a little bit more of an inkling that there's just a chance, Ryan. And it was at the start of, I think, I can't remember if it was Tuesday night's or Monday night's episode, but almost the first 5 minutes was the Tara story. The last time on Survivor was all about her and how she tried to make a move to get Lockie out, but it didn't work. She had to reconsider and do it again. And then the first 5 minutes was almost her just talking to the camera constantly. And it just, I don't know. It just, I don't think she wins, but I also, if she does, it wouldn't surprise me.
It's such an interesting one. I don't know what to make. If we get to the end of this season and we had someone like Tara win, and that's not being disparaging to her, but if we had Tara win, who hasn't been the biggest strategic player, after we've been in a season where we praised it for its strategic moves and how big it's been, I think that would be a really, I don't know, it's a really interesting question. Like, a question here from Lancelot Draper just says, is it okay that I'm a little sad that this amazing season produced a disappointing Final Four? Like, do you think it's a disappointing Final Four considering the big players we've had this season?
I mean, I don't know if you can be disappointed if the guys that make it to the end. That's kind of how I've always seen it. I don't necessarily think it means they're the four best players either, but I think right now the four that are still out there have in some way, shape or form earned their spot, and other people, you know, that fell before them made some sort of mistake to have them not there themselves, I guess. But, I mean, the difficulty is with this length of these seasons, I kind of get the feeling there is always going to be a moment where it's a little bit lackluster, where if that means, you know, the middle, like post-merge but before Final 7, like our season, was real lackluster. Yep. Everyone was bored. Everyone was over it. I totally get that. I really hope this season has escaped that and this Final Four is good. But there is definitely, in the back of my head, a concern that maybe it's not going to be. I just want to give them a chance to prove that they are worthwhile of being there, though, as well. And I think, I really do hope we're going to see that. I think we do have guys like Michelle who, you know, I think she is deserving of being there. I think she's a really strong player.
So Matt, stay on that for a sec, because Edmo asked, Michelle seems to be the most polarizing figure remaining. Would you be satisfied if Michelle won, or why not?
Yeah, I'd be happy if Michelle won. For the exact same reasons I said before, I guess, about why I like Michelle. I think she is strategic, she's smart, she's found her way on the bottom and she's fought her way up from there. And since then, despite being a polarizing figure even out on the island, she's managed to stay out there.
Yeah.
And that's really tough when you're out there and she is polarizing and they are, like, a lot of the cast are seeing exactly what we're seeing in regards to her at Tribal and stuff as well. That must be sometimes tough to hear or listen to out there as well. It must be annoying, but she's surviving out there. If she won, I'd be happy.
Alice Borelli just asks, is there anyone who you're surprised who's made it this far? Maybe you talk about what you predicted preseason. Is there anyone who's completely shocked you to get to this point and be in the Final Four?
Tara is definitely one that I don't think I would have expected she was going to get as far as she did. But I definitely had, I had Tara in 15th spot. So, yeah, I mean, she's definitely someone I did not expect to go as far as she did. But outside of that, I think most of these guys, I was at least had them in the merge. I had Michelle in 9th spot, so I probably didn't expect to see a lot from her. I think only due to the fact that her pre-game knowledge didn't seem to be necessarily very strong. She was a nanny, so I just didn't think that was going to bring anything out there, and I didn't think people were going to be able to relate to a nanny because, I mean, most people wouldn't know nannies and this kind of stuff. I didn't have Peter making the merge, but again, probably only because I just didn't know enough about him. I had Jericho on my top four, though. He's not a surprise at all. I just expected big things from him the whole season, basically. So I would say almost outside of Jericho, there was no one that really stood out from this final four, but I'm not necessarily overly surprised in any of them outside of maybe Tara.
David Baltazar, I think we already kind of touched on this a little bit, but he asked, do you think Tara should have gone to Rox? I don't know. I still think it was the right move for her to do what she did. I just think avoid Rox, avoid that 33.334% chance of going home and just take it and take the chance. And I feel like there's enough people who would still want to take her towards the end.
As I said before, Tara is not a threat to any of the four out there, apart from herself. And I just think whatever move she made then, she wants to do the one that has the least risk of her going home at that moment, and that is to take the 0% chance of going home rather than the 33.33% chance of going home. So I actually think it was the right move to make, and I think she's almost a certainty or close to it of being someone that gets to the end. Whether she deserves it or whether people are happy by that, maybe not. I just look at her and go, well, she's probably the least physical out there as well, so she's probably going to make it past the next vote because they're going to know it's probably going to be an endurance challenge at the final three. She probably won't win that challenge. Whoever does win, let's say, out of any of them, who do you want to sit on at the end? You probably want to sit with Tara. That's just how I see it. So I think she made the right move.
I love this question from Luke Scott. He asks, if Michelle gifted the car in exchange for final four immunity, who of the other four would be most likely to do a Dreams and totally dog Michelle?
Instantly Jericho.
He'd be smiling while he's doing it. He'd love it.
He would have absolutely loved for that to happen. It wouldn't surprise me if he even tried for it to happen. But yeah. Jericho's the one, I think, that would probably make that move occur.
This one comes from Lily Harper. She says, do you think any of the players should be classified as elite players or characters? She genuinely believes that Luke, as a top 10, maybe even top 5 Survivor character of all time, he's a 1 in a billion character. So I guess we're looking holistically at the season. Who have been the big characters or players that have stood out to you? Like, for me personally, I think Luke has been an absolutely brilliant character, not necessarily a player, but a brilliant character nonetheless.
Luke is one of the best reality TV cast members ever, is how I see it. He would be, and this isn't a Survivor, I think he is just absolutely brilliant TV. I don't know if I'd ever want to play alongside him because he is a bit of a loose cannon, and I don't know if he actually is as strategic or as good of a game player as people make out to be. I think he's probably watched one season of Survivor and seen Tony play the game and just has kind of copied a lot of those things.
Yeah, he told me he just watched YouTube clips to get up to date with Survivor before he went out.
Yeah, so I think he's probably just seen a lot of Tony stuff, which is kind of just what I assumed when I was watching him. But I think in regards to character-wise, yeah, he is just absolutely brilliant. If they ever decide to do a returnee season, he's one of the first called. I also wouldn't be surprised to see him doing something else.
I would be surprised. Like, we have I'm a Celebrity in Australia. I would not be surprised. And it's run by the same network. I wouldn't be surprised if he was called up for something like that. He's just a huge character. And I got to say, Matt, probably since like Tim Dormer on Big Brother, and he also played Big Brother Canada, so US listeners probably know him very well. Like, I don't think we've had a better reality TV casting in Australia since that.
No, outside of Matt Tarrant last year, I think Luke's the number one.
No. Matt, I think you've got bloody competition in just the best magician at the moment with Apollo. Gosh, he's running on fire.
Don't stress me out, Ryan. But yeah, no. But Luke is really great. And look, I'm adamant. We've had this discussion before, and we haven't spoken about it for a while, so I'm not sure if you still believe it. I honestly believe the Australian Survivor 2016 season one, whatever you want to call it, cast overall was really strong. And I think we had some really strong players in that season overall. I think this season isn't as strong overall, but, and it's a big but, they have better, like a much, much stronger top end. Like, they're probably top 3 or 4 characters this season completely smash our top like two, like by such a long way. I just think there's also just a fair bit of, I can't say the word filler because that's really rude, but a characters that either didn't get a chance to progress to what they should have been or what they could have been. And they, a lot of those probably did make pre-merge, I guess. We're not left with a lot of them. But yeah, that's just how I see it. But there are guys out here, you know, guys like AK, Henry, Luke, like even Lockie, even Tara, that just really, really good cast, and a really high peak at the top there. And there's a lot of them. And the guys, especially this season, I think are really strong. That's the one thing I guess I could say. Jericho. I love Jericho. There's so many. I forget them all. That's the thing, Ryan. It's a really great top end cast.
I think that, like, I don't think there's any debate about the seasons itself, which season was better, season one or season two.
Oh,
I think, like,
two.
Universally, it is so much better. But I do think that there were many good players last season. One last question just comes from Elton. He just asked the GOAT versus player debate. How does Peter change his perception now of him being labeled a GOAT to the jury? Do you think that he can avoid this tag, or is it just going to be something that's going to stick with him now?
This is the issue of Peter, and we've said this before, is what does he target in regards to his strategy and his moves to get rid of that title? And I can't name anything. I don't think you can either. So how are the jury going to believe it? I think the jury this year, that they've seen a lot more of Pete's game than we had of Christie's last year, remembering that with the final jury, most of us were from Sinapu and hadn't seen really any of Christie's game. Peter's a bit of a different fish, where I think people have seen a bit more of how he's played or how he hasn't played. So he doesn't have that opportunity. So I don't know if he can remove that stigma from his game. So I think he has to find a way to make it work for him. Is he going to be able to do that? Does he have enough other things there to bring it up? I don't know if he does. I don't think he can. I just can't see Pete winning. I just can't see him for this exact reason. What is his resume? He is a GOAT, or at least he's been labeled a GOAT out there. How does he get away from that? I can't see how he does. I don't know. I don't know.
It's super tricky for him. I think that it's a label that could potentially stick. He's got, like we said before, he's just going to have to hope that his social game is really good, and he's sitting at the end with someone who can fight against, and someone who maybe has not been as respected as he has, because there are some people on the jury now who I don't think will vote for Pete regardless. So got an uphill battle at this point.
His social game's the only thing which might get him through, and maybe he has some sort of real epic story he can pull out for the final tribal, but yeah, we just haven't seen it yet enough. And I think just through the edit I'm seeing from him, I just don't think it's coming either.
So, Maddie, this is where I bring you to one of the most exciting parts of the Noel Oz. We talk about the DQ Awards, which stand for the Des Quilty Awards for the best sound bites of the week. And thank you so much to Shannon Gates for giving me some suggestions for the DQ Award. I've got to say, and Shannon was in the same boat, it wasn't a great week for sound bites this week. So I've got two for you to listen to. One of them we've already heard, but I'll play that in a moment. But the first one is of Lockie after he is voted out.
What a day to go out on. I mean, I lost a car, lost half a mil, lost immunity, lost my winning streak. I mean, couldn't go out on a bigger bombshell, could I?
So we've got Lockie just crying that he's lost absolutely everything. He's lost the car, he's lost everything, he is gone. And the last one, which is my personal favourite from the week, is this one here, Matty.
Tara, you got a headache?
I just love it. Oh, I just love JLP.
It's really good, isn't it? See, it's funny because I actually wrote down one quote, and I wrote down, I lost a car, I lost a half mil, lost immunity, lost my winning streak. And I think that combined with the moment of him getting in or having to get in the Holden to Jury Villa is brilliant.
Okay,
but also, I think as a soundbite, I think the headache calls better. It's a toss of the coin, Ryan. So I'm going to give it to you, bud. What do you think?
I love the headache coin.
Done.
I just think it's
Lock
fantastic.
It in. Lock it in.
Done. All right, JLP for the DQ award. The last one is the Danzy. I was like, do we give a Danzy this week? Like, can you think of a different award to give for player of the week? Do you have any award names, Matt? Like, you're here. What kind of award is reminiscent of Matt Tarrant?
Well, we've set up a little bit of a fantasy league for Survivor, and I've actually gone out and ordered a trophy, which is the Chester Award of Excellence. So
Chester Award of Excellence. Okay, I think we have to reward the Chester Award of Excellence.
I think it's pretty good. So we can give the Chester Award of Excellence. Now, who would it be to? So, I don't know. It's really tough, isn't it? Because we don't have, as we've said a few times today, there's not a hell of a lot left, or at least guys that haven't made a huge amount of moves this week. I think despite what people say about the move that she made, I think I have to give it to Tara for changing her vote and for getting someone out like Lockie, who I think has a bigger chance of someone like a Peter maybe of winning and knowing hopefully that she's going to be dragged along the way. It's goatish, but that's who I'd probably give it to, I guess. It's tough though. There's not, I can't find a player that I'd necessarily love this week.
Chester Award of Excellence, we're giving it, we're nominating it, it's going straight to Tara, and I don't know, I'm just presuming, I've listened to most Nick's podcasts, I can't remember who he gives it to, I can't assume that he's given Tara a Danzy Award before, so the Chester Award of Excellence, it's above everything else, Matt, for this week, and Tara, congratulations on the week 10 Chester Award of Excellence.
I didn't
award.
Sound very confident giving that though, did I? I think she's kind of been like one of those, like, it's like a group participation award, is what it sounds like, and that's kind of how it feels, to be honest.
Hey, Matt, I've got a whole wall full of group participation awards. That's my family. We have parties. We celebrate. Oh, Ryan, you come home with another participation award. It's my wheelhouse.
Join the club. I was given, just a bit of a side story, I was given a most improved award at gymnastics when I was 7 years old. And up until I was 21, I just always assumed I was actually really quite good at gymnastics, but I just stopped. It wasn't until my 21st birthday, Mum came honest with me and said that, you know what, Matt, the teacher gave you that award after he said to me, Matt is holding back every single child in this class. He needs to leave. If you get him out of this class, we'll give him a trophy. And that's what happened. So it absolutely broke my heart that it turns out I wasn't this gymnast of the future. I just am really unco. And that's a true story.
Same boat. I think the only trophy I've actually ever won was a fantasy football trophy. So, yeah, that's all I can live on, Matt. It's just fantasy football, and that's about it.
We're pathetic.
Yep, pretty much. before we end, oh God, I never do this on my podcast, but we are on our RHAP podcast, so we need to do a hashtag for the episode. I feel like this is something that's very hard that Nick does really well. Rob does amazingly. They always find something out. I don't know, what kind of a hashtag do you think we could go with for this episode?
I mean, headache is a good one instantly, isn't it? I mean, I think we both love that quote straight away. What about, could we find something maybe to do with Lee and the Holden? Where's Lee, maybe? Could Where's Lee be a hashtag?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like we give Lee so much airtime. Use the hashtag Wesley. I also love the hashtag Survivor Headache. I think it talks about maybe where we're at the moment. So use that. Use the Noah Dawes hashtag as well. Hashtag Noah Dawes. Where is Lee? That is the big question. That's where, following him on Instagram, he's droning it and getting into it. So he's having a good time. I believe Lee's going to be the finale, so he might be on TV, which is super exciting to see more Lee and more Holden. Do you think they're going to give Michelle the Holden at the finale, so she could have a winner's check and also a Holden if she
imagine
wins.
That there's a good chance, but I'm looking forward to seeing, as we said before, there's a few of our season one contestants going to be invited to the finale, which we're really excited about. I'm really fortunate that I am one of them. There's not many of us, which is a bit sad. I don't know why they didn't invite all of us out there, but really fortunate there's a few of the guys that even aren't invited are still going to come along to Sydney for the weekend. So really looking forward to that. Unfortunately, as we know, Nick's in Japan, so he can't make it, but we're going to have a lot of fun. I'm actually going to be posting, well, hopefully, being able to record a little bit of stuff with a few of the contestants as well. So stay tuned to my YouTube and stuff, because I'll hopefully be posting a few things there as well.
Yeah, and that's all at Matt Tarrant.
Yeah, it's all Matt Tarrant. So my Facebook's Matt Tarrant, my Twitter's Matt Tarrant, my Instagram's Matt Tarrant AU, and my YouTube is Matt Tarrant too. And I've been trying to do a bit of Survivor content this year with some Power Rankings videos. I think they've been a lot of fun. They're a bit more casual than a lot of the other stuff. So like, check them out if you want, and I'd love your feedback.
Yeah, 100%. Follow Matt and Matt Tarrant. Follow me at Ryan V. Brink. This has been the Survivor Not Oz. Matt, I think we're done.
We're perfect. We did so well.
All right, until next time, this has been the Survivor Not Oz on behalf of Nick Idanza, who is currently on Exile Island. We'll chat to you guys very soon. Bye.